Chalks off and start them up. This is Aviator Cast, episode Tree Niner.
Calling all aviators, pilots, and aviation lovers. Welcome to Aviator Cast, where we close the gap between real aviation and flight simulation. Climb aboard, buckle up, and prepare for takeoff. Here's your host, Chris Palmer.
Welcome, 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 aviators. You've landed at Aviator Cast. My name is Chris Palmer, dashing and stretching the sky so long, eyes gazing forward across the endless blanket of white, wispy clouds, rushing by at over 200 knots, I'm at home. I'm the founder and owner of Angle of Attack, a flight simulation training company, which is bringing you this podcast today. Aviator Cast is a weekly podcast where we talk about the spirit of the aviator. We believe flying is an art form, one that we have to continually practice and master. This mastery is gained through a focus on continual learning, human factors, humility, and a commitment to excellence. Show notes, transcript, community discussion, and links for this episode can be found by simply going to aviatorcast.com. So welcome to this, the 39th episode of Aviator Cast. It is my pleasure to have you here. We have a great interview lined up for you to listen to today. But first, we have a review that comes from Birdie. He gives us 5 stars. He says, a must for aviation and flight sim enthusiasts. And here's his review. Entertaining, interesting, and packed with useful info for anyone who is interested in aviation. If there's one phrase to sum up the show, I guess that's it. Short and sweet. Thank you very much, Birdie. You can also leave a review anywhere you'd like, but iTunes is the primary place to leave a review. That's where most people find out about the podcast, and we'd love to hear from you there if you enjoy this show. So we have a great interview lined up for you today. We have Rick Todd. Rick is from Chicago Premier Flight Training. But that's not it. Rick is also very, very involved with using flight simulation as part of his training curriculum with his pilots. A very unique take on what simulation can do for flight training. And, you know, not just the loggable stuff, but the stuff where you just go in a simulator and you fly, fly, fly and really get used to it. He's a big passionate believer that a simulator is a huge tool for a student pilot, and you'll hear that in our interview. Rick is also on the board of directors for NAFI, which is the National Association of Flight Instructors. This guy really knows what he's doing. He really has a great take on this mix between real aviation and flight simulation and how they help each other, and he's just a top-notch guy. So here we go. Let's get into Hangar Talk with Rick Todd.
Now, a special Hangar Talk segment.
All right, everybody, we are honored to have Rick Todd with us today. How are you, Rick?
I am doing great, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. It's a little bit early here. It's, I think, 9 a.m. where you are. It's 6 a.m. where I am. So We are going to have an awesome show this morning. So tell me a little bit about, first of all, I asked this about everybody, and that is, how did you fall in love with aviation? Now, we're going to get into some pretty cool stuff on the simulation side, and we don't always have that conversation. We often have the conversation of, you know, flight training and things like that, and don't really get into the simulation stuff, but you're pretty passionate about taking simulation and making it useful for pilots. But first of all, before we get into any of that, how did you fall in love with aviation?
Yeah, it's kind of a strange story. You know, my grandmother actually took me out to a couple airfields when I was a kid, and I really think that had an impact, you know, walking in the grass and seeing all the airplanes. It's a memory that is still vivid to this day that I could go back to. It wasn't until I was in my mid-20s that I really, after college, decided, you know, I really want to go and try to learn to fly. And you know, Cessna was doing their $50 Be a Pilot program at that point. So I figured, what better way to do it? It's $50. We'll go out to an airport, me and my brother-in-law did. and, you know, did a short little trip. It was only maybe 25 miles, but I tell you right there, that was it. And I was done. I signed up that day, and a year later had my private pilot certificate and was just enjoying aviation.
And caught the bug like many of us.
Absolutely.
So how did it progress from there?
You know, as everybody knows, you know, the economy kind of took a little bit of a hit there, 2007, 2008. And, you know, my primary job is in manufacturing. I'm actually vice president of a manufacturing company. And we were having a little bit of a trouble, just like everybody else. So, you know, I wanted a backup, not necessarily to go to the airlines, but, you know, I figured, well, you know, I might as well. We're a little bit slower. I'll see where I could take these ratings. You know, I have such a passion for aviation, and we'll kind of go from there. So in 2007, I started out and went to ATP, actually. Got my instrument all the way through multi-engine instruction, flight instructor instrument, advanced ground, instrument ground, and, you know, all the ratings there. And then kind of went and started teaching at a couple local FBOs.
Great. So, yeah, that was kind of my next question is you have some options in front of you now that you have all those ratings and you chose to teach. Why do you think you kind of went the teaching route?
Well, you know, teaching is just so rewarding. I mean, number one, it's it gets you in front of people. I've met so many great people in aviation. You know, I got my accountant now is he was a pilot that I met. You know, other people like that. Everybody, you get people from all walks of life in aviation, and just incredible the people you meet. So that's the one thing. The second thing is just the reward for teaching somebody. I mean, you're giving them the ability to take an aircraft and defy gravity. And that is just so incredible. The feeling. I mean, I remember my first time. I think every single person can go back to that first time they were in a light aircraft and remember that feeling. It's the same thing going back to your solo. You remember that day. You remember the conditions.
Yep.
It's just something that sticks in your mind. And giving people that opportunity is just incredible. They really have no idea what it's going to be like until they're actually there. And you know what I tell people? I warn them ahead of time. I say, you know what? Aviation is the best drug you could ever be on. It's completely legal, and you'll be addicted for life. It really is.
Definitely. So now you are kind of doing a couple other big things that you and I have talked about a little bit behind the scenes here. So tell us a little bit about the flight school that you're working with and also your involvement with NAFI and what NAFI is.
Sure, absolutely. Back in 2011, I actually had a boat rental and leasing company that I was dabbling around with. And, you know, after I got some of my instructor ratings, I said, well, let's just change this to a flight school. So I had a couple of friends that were instructors, and we all got together and started Chicago Premier Flight Training just out of southwest suburbs of Chicago back in 2011. And the main focus on our stuff is high-quality instruction and a major emphasis on flight simulation, which we'll get to a little bit later in the podcast here. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I was approached by one of my instructors who was on the board of directors for NAFI, which is the National Association of Flight Instructors. The organization is kind of like IEEE for instructors. Okay, National Association, we have over 3,800 members. And just the value in numbers. You meet a lot of good people, just like you do in aviation, a lot of good instructors. You know, we met Rich Graham, SR-71 instructor. I mean, he's a member of NAFI. Just incredible people. And that individual approached me to become a board member, which I thought was really neat, incredible opportunity to try to mold the future of the organization, the future of flight instruction. So we, let's see, that was about 2 years ago now. And we started out and we had a little bit of a struggle there. And NAFI as an organization had a couple things we had to fix. And I tell you, we got right on the right foot and just got an incredible board. We got some incredible programs coming out. And it's really focusing on making the instructor better, you know. We always talk about professionalism in instruction, but what exactly does that mean? You know, what is exactly does it mean to be a professional? We don't have variables that tell us what it is to be a professional. So we're actually working on developing a couple programs, one in particular, that solely focuses on developing the instructor as a person, as a teacher, as a mentor, to try to really increase the quality of instruction. Because you know, Chris, just as well as I do, you're an aviator, and it's a known fact. 90% of the people that start training drop out right after solo. It's a fact of the matter. It's something that we need to fix. Some of that is due to instruction. So one of NAFI's goals is to try to increase that value of instruction and importance of quality instruction.
Great.
So it's been a real pleasure serving on the board. I was recently elected onto our board for the NAFI Education Foundation. We got a really cool program we're going to be starting hopefully the end of next year. And I know this will take heart because we talked about this a little bit, and that's the mobile training facility where we'll actually have 12 flight training devices that's going to tour the country to high schools, aviation events, everything, bringing aviation to the people instead of just asking them to come out to the airport to try to, you know, get a little bit better turnover for getting people interested in aviation.
Great. That's fantastic. So we've kind of gone through your background in the flying portion, mostly caught up to where you are today as far as the professional end of aviation. How did you get involved with simulation, and why did that kind of grow up so naturally alongside your aviation stuff?
Yeah, good question. Actually, when I started training, and this was back, I did simulation even before I started flight training, actually. And it goes back to Flight Simulator 98. And, you know, I had my little joystick and stuff and do that. And then there was a combat simulator. Man, that was cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, came out. So, you know, and you know just as well as I do, Microsoft Flight Simulator, Microsoft's longest running program, and just a lot of fun. I mean, it's immersive. It got better throughout the years, you know, to the point where you can actually flick the switches and program your GPS into a flight plan and shoot approaches. I mean, it was one of the most immersive things that I could see. Just a really, really good program.
Okay, so you kind of learned about how simulation was valuable. How did you bring that into your instructor space and start to use it?
Well, you know, back, obviously, I supplemented my training with Microsoft Flight Simulator, like I said. And, you know, back in, I think it was 2010, there was a book that came out, Microsoft Flight Simulator X for Real World Pilots. I said, wow, this is a really cool book, because it had scenarios in there. It actually put you in a little bit better training environment instead of just going up and you know, flying a 737 or something. But it actually put that, you know, 172 in real life scenarios and gave you a reason, you know, a mission to be on.
Right.
And actually, Flight Simulator X and even Flight Simulator 2004 did that with the Kings. John and Martha King did a bunch of segments on Flight Simulator 2004, kind of starting that routine. And I think it worked very well for them.
Definitely.
The importance, though, is just incredible. And because of that one book, there's been multiple books that have come out now. Even Sporty's Pilot Center has a supplement for their private pilot. And the funny thing is, Chris, they don't even market it very well. You actually have to dig through their site to find this thing. You know, I've been pushing, obviously being on the board, we talked to Hal Shevers, you know, and one of the things I mentioned was, you know, this is so important for getting people's hours down. And not just the hours down, but the quality of the instruction.
Yep.
I mean, most of my students now will actually fly the missions in the simulator before we go out and do them in the real airplane.
Right.
And it's not on a FAA-certified simulator. In fact, we have two simulators in my facility. One's a Redbird TD2, basic aviation training device. And the other one is one that we built up with a bunch of SATEC products. Mm-hmm. You know, they're multi-panels, they're radios. And you know which one is the one that's used the most? The one that costs like a quarter the amount of the Redbird. and that's the one with all the SATEC products.
Right.
But they'll go and they'll do the missions beforehand. And man, I tell you, I have one individual. He was on his fourth flight, and I'm not even exaggerating. That man probably could have soloed. He was that comfortable and that on top of the airplane, mm-hmm. that just the ability. I've never seen it in the 8 years that I've been in. Six years I've been instructing here. Just haven't seen that kind of quality come out. And it's really because of simulation, just the practice. You know, we've said the old adage, practice makes perfect, right? Well, we say perfect practice makes permanent. Mm-hmm. And that's really the key here. We're perfecting that practice by doing it in the simulator beforehand. And you know what? It's cheap. It's you can't compare that to burning avgas and everything else. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing that I really stress with people. So go, you know, aviation is expensive enough. We all complain about it. It's not going to get any better. You know, gas prices are probably just going to go up.
Yeah.
So what do? We practice. Practice on the simulator. Make that lesson that you have in the real airplane as impactful as possible.
Mm-hmm. Great. So tell us about the accessibility of your simulators, because that was something that was very attractive to me.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. These, you know, because of the emphasis that we put on simulators, a lot of flying clubs, and you probably know this, you pay a monthly fee and you get a discount rate on their airplanes. Okay. And sometimes other people will go out and do flyouts, a breakfast club or something like that. But where is that money really going? And that was one of the things when we started our program was, we want to make sure that our flying club funds stay within the club and provide the services for the people to really get the most amount of use out of the facility. So because of that, our club members actually have an RFID key tag, and they can get into our office 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and use any of the simulators.
Great.
As well as our aviation library. And that was done to try to promote people to further educate themselves without any extra cost.
Right.
It's still surprising to me how many people don't take up on that, but the people that do are just thrilled about the program. They love it. And you know what? As an FBO owner, it doesn't cost me anything extra.
Right.
You know, the simulators are all paid for. It's creating better customer service, better pilots, so why not do it? And to my knowledge, I mean, in the Midwest, we're the only ones that have 24-hour access like that to our simulators. A lot of flight schools, for some reason, insist that an instructor be present when using the simulator. I'm not on that board. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people are competent. They can operate a computer without any issues. They're not going to go and take a baseball bat to the simulator. I've never had any problems in the 2 years I've been doing this. Just great response from the whole program.
Right. And I don't necessarily know how RFID works, but I can imagine it tracks who's logging in.
Yeah,
absolutely. So there's some accountability there. It's not like there's anonymity, you know.
Right, yeah. They do have to scan in and scan out, so that was one of the things. But, you know, it was a little $400 door lock that we put on, and it keeps track of everything. So, you know, just a simple addition like that can go a long way.
Great. So tell us also, after all that, and we'll probably touch on some of that again, I'm just trying to get in kind of all the different things you're working in here. Tell us also some of these programs you're talking about with high school students. You've mentioned them to me before, and you've mentioned one of them already, and that is the mobile units.
Yeah, the NAFI Learn to Fly Tour. Yeah. Well, one of the things that we talked about at NAFI, this was an idea just about 2.5 years ago when I was still a member. And the idea was posed of, how about we go out and bring a flight simulator to high schools. And I said, wow, that's a great idea. You know, I would have loved to have a program like that in my high school. And in fact, some high schools even have aviation programs, which I wasn't even aware of. There's a high school by our house in Lockport, Illinois, and they actually have an aviation program that you can take.
Great.
You know, which at the end of that program, they basically take the exam for the private pilot. What better idea?
Wow.
So that's one of those things we're going to start out at locations like that. But the problem that we came across was, well, if we do this with one simulator, we have, you know, a class of 30 to 32 kids now. You know, it's going to take forever and a year to get people through that. So we developed a concept called the Mobile Aviation Training Facility, which is actually using a recycled cargo container, 53-foot cargo container, and it'll be completely self-sufficient. We have heating, air conditioning, power, everything on there.
Great.
And so we'll be able to pull this up. We don't have to do anything else with the high schools, and quite literally just have the class come in and start training. So it's it'll be really, really good for the high schools. The concept was, like I said before, bringing aviation to the classroom. You know, we have a lot of outreach programs out there right now in aviation. We have the Young Eagles program, which is fantastic. AOPA started the Aviators program, and there's several other ones, smaller programs out there as well. But the problem with that is there's no follow-up. You know, the person, for example, in Young Eagles will go out, they'll do a flight, a ride, and there's nothing really in place to make sure they go back out to the airport to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're doing with the training facility is, number one, bringing aviation to them, and number two, it's actually going to be staffed by local FBO flight instructors.
Great.
So that way the relationship is there, the connection is there. So they can say, oh, wow, yeah, this is really cool. I'm going to go and fly with Roger, man. He was really, really great. Talk to me about all this aviation stuff. Yeah, I want to go and take a flight with him.
Right.
Because you're already having a relationship now with those people. Instead of – it is kind of a strange environment, you know, walking into a an FBO at an airport. A lot of them aren't really built for young adults or teenagers. You know, it's kind of intimidating. And this is kind of one of those comfort levels. If they have something that they can associate with when they're going in there, they're going to be so much more comfortable with it. And hopefully, obviously we don't have any statistics to back this up, but hopefully the training experience will be a lot better, and we'll get that dropout rate down.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, this is just kind of a small comparison, and I can imagine that there's some sort of scientific data to back it up, but I learned several years ago that the Olympic ski jumpers, I'm not sure the exact event name, but the event where they go down the very large ramp and basically jump hundreds of yards, those contestants or competitors, they actually start when they're like 5 years old because it just like melds into their mind and they kind of get over the fear complexes of it. So I can imagine that with teenagers as well, when they're in those early stages of really kind of finding out what they want to do and before they really kind of get into a heavy job and they're kind of thinking just money track and getting a paycheck sort of thing, that actually having something before that time or in that time is very beneficial. And, you know, for me, that was largely actually my experience because I had simulators all growing up. And now I recognize that I never really thought of being a pilot until I was 16, 17 years old. But I always had simulators. You know, I had European Air War. I had Combat Flight Simulator. I had Microsoft Flight Simulator itself. And although some of those are games, just flat out games and not necessarily a simulator, they helped me understand how things work and, you know, what happens when I kick the rudder a little bit so I can shoot down a Nazi airplane, you know, just to get my gun to the right a little bit, just kick the rudder, just little things like that. And I think that really gets these students ahead of the game. And just in my specific case, and this isn't boasting at all, But I just remember how complimentary my instructors were when I went through training about my footwork and also my hand flying skills. Because I actually kind of knew already what the movements of the airplane just based on the practice that I had done. And it really helped me along the way, and I had fewer holdups. And I think something I'm gathering so far, and I think we're going to get into this more, something I'm gathering so far from you is that there is great opportunity, not only for teenagers, but for all people who are learning to fly, to kind of learn some of these things on a simulator. And then when they get into the airplane, they already have that base set of knowledge, and the training and the time spent in those expensive airplanes, that expensive time is spent very wisely and it's spent well.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that you were touching on that I think is really important, and hopefully you have a demographic in this area, but the importance I shouldn't say importance, but getting your private pilot license when you're in high school. We've talked to many, many universities, and having that on your resume, that you are a private pilot. We talked to a lot of admissions counselors, both for Embry-Riddle and some of the other major universities, even if you're not going into aviation. And that has a huge impact, apparently, on decision-making. Mm-hmm. Because it shows that you have good decision-making skills, basic mathematics skills, you know, all these things that we talk about in aviation. You know, we're emphasizing STEM training, right? Or what I like to do is STEAM training, because I like the arts as well. Mm-hmm. But you got that science, technology, mathematics. All of that stuff is so important in aviation. We use every aspect of it.
Definitely.
So it's, you know, it's kind of funny because the nation, our nation is really emphasizing this STEM and STEAM type of education. And we've been doing it for years.
Yeah.
You know, it's all encompassing in aviation. We use all of that stuff.
That's one thing I really like about aviation, and it's especially for younger students. It's a practical way to bring all of those different elements together. And right. I think that's why it's always remained very attractive to me, because I'm sort of a, you know, I am a focused person. I'm driven, but I also like to jump around. And when it comes to aviation, I kind of get all of these different areas that I'm passionate about, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's great. It's just this meld of all the stuff that I really love. So,
yeah, pretty cool. It really is.
All right. So let's get into more of what you're seeing with students that have actually gone through a lot of this simulation along with their private pilot. So maybe you have some particular examples in mind of people that have done a lot of this simulation stuff on the side, and also having gone through their private pilot and kind of seeing what that means to their training. And maybe you even have an example of someone that just went purely through a private pilot, so you can kind of compare. But do you have any situations where just come to mind that you've seen this sort of thing happening, and what that meant for the student and what that meant for their pocketbook and time and all sorts of things?
Oh, yeah. It's an incredible difference. I mean, right now, and I believe, don't quote me exactly on the statistics, but AOPA came out again, and the average time for private pilot is somewhere around 60 hours, 60 mm-hmm. to 65, I believe. Some marks have all been up to like 70 hours. Okay. Now, you know, just as well as I do, when you walk into FBO, the FBO guy comes and says, oh yeah, you could get your private pilot. It's only 40 hours. That's it. It's all it takes. you know, I can count on one hand the number of people that got it within 40 to 45 hours.
Right.
However, we did have a student actually, just recently get his private pilot license, and he was at 44 and a half hours. He was in the simulator at least twice to three times a week, and we only went up and flew once a week.
Wow.
So that's just incredible, because usually, you know, the recency and stuff, you want to go up in an airplane if you want to hit those low hours at least two to three times a week. If you're replacing that, though, with the simulator, you still have that recency. It's just you don't have the physical, G-forces and feelings with the gravity and everything that you do in the real aircraft.
Right.
You're never going to be able to recreate that. Even on the level D simulator, the ones that are millions of dollars that the airline pilots train on, they'll even tell you the same thing. You know, this thing doesn't fly like the real airplane.
Right.
It's almost impossible to recreate that. But it's the process, okay? It's that process that we're trying to reinforce. The use of checklists. Even in the simulator, I have them use our full checklist. So they actually go from the apron area, they do a startup, they do a taxi, they go to the end of the runway, they do the run-up, just like you would in the real airplane. Is it a little bit of a pain to do that in the simulator? Sure. But you know what? It's consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's a consistent training from the computer to the actual aircraft. And I think that's one thing that really helps with the keeping the hours low and the costs low. But I mean, now this gentleman, and actually he was in a club airplane. He was paying, I think, $80 an hour wet for a Piper Warrior.
Wow.
And then my instructor fee. And he was using the simulator. And I don't know the exact numbers, but I think it was only around $5,000 is what it cost him.
Wow.
It's not unusual these days to hear people paying up in the $10,000 range. But again, that's because people have not used simulation in the way that it really should be used.
Right.
And I think that, you know, part of it is the FAA. The FAA is kind of looks down on it, actually, as far as private pilots go. It doesn't really offer up very good acknowledgement that using a PC training device helps in proficiency and things like that, because it's not certified by them.
Right.
And we get into this certification thing that we've talked about. And the thing is, yeah, it's nice to fly certified simulators, but it's not a requirement. You know, really what we're trying to do is proficiency, not the requirements of currency, rather.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between currency and a difference between proficiency. And right now, I focus on proficiency. I mean, yes, in a basic aviation training device, you can do 10 hours towards the instrument rating. You can do 2.5 towards the instrument portion of the private pilot. That would count towards a rating. However, in a private pilot, first of all, I would never sign anybody off with just a half hour of actual airtime under the hood in an airplane. It's not going to happen. So that's kind of a weird loophole why the FAA has done that. But it really does not tell pilots or tell student pilots that, hey, this is really important that you practice this stuff. We talked about, I don't know if you did this, but when I was learning to fly, you know, the instructor said, hey, you should go and chair fly, right? Right?
Yeah.
You sit in the airplane, you play with the gauges and stuff, and you kind of, you know, make airplane sounds and, pretend like you're flying, right? So what is it? It's simulation.
Exactly.
It's doing the exact same thing that we do in the simulator, except the simulator is a lot better at it than our imagination.
Yeah.
Now I'm not discounting that, because it's still important to sit in your airplane, know where all the dials and knobs and switches are, because that does vary from aircraft to aircraft, and it might be a little bit different from the simulator model that you have. But it is essentially doing the exact same thing. So we've been doing it for years, and the FAA has been promoting it, because they talk about chair flying in the airplane flying handbook and things like that.
Right.
But just a little bit different angle. And it speaks for itself. The practice speaks for itself. We've proven it. It's a proven concept. People can genuinely reduce the cost of training by using simulators.
And that doesn't necessarily mean reducing the time. And I think this is one of the things that we need to get over as a training community, and even as a community of students or people learning to fly, is this proficiency versus, I guess, what would be the word for that?
The requirements.
Yeah, the requirements and the money involved and all of that.
Yes.
You know, we're pigeonholed in this idea right now that we've got to get X amount of hours and we've got to get we've got to get our license as soon as possible because that's what everyone wants to do. You know, I understand. You know, I get it. Mm-hmm. I understand that you want to go up and you want to be able to take up your mom and dad or your wife and kids as soon as possible legally in an airplane, and you can't do that until you actually have your private pilot license. But what a lot of people are missing is that this industry and being an aviator is not about just the ticket you get. It's about how safe you are from day to day. It's about how great of an aviator you actually are. There are plenty of pilots out there, you know? Maybe we should start calling it the private aviator license instead of the private pilot license. You know, an aviator takes this a lot more seriously. They really take it by the reins and they dive in and they put the time in that they need to put in. Now, I actually had a podcast about this. It just kind of my own particular story long time ago. We're on episode 39 now, but this was a long time ago, probably around episode 20. But I kind of reflected back on getting my private pilot and going and doing my first solo cross country, or the first cross country that I did as a private pilot. I took my brother and we went kind of weaved through some mountains and went up to this lake. And anyway, we landed at this airport there. And reflecting back on that, I realized, you know, I actually didn't have the experience I needed to do a complex flight like that, at least safely. Mm-hmm. So to a certain extent, you've got to be cut loose at some time, but that doesn't mean that you can't work things in your favor and get ahead of the game. And I think one of the absolute cheapest ways to get ahead of the game, and I say cheap because the vast majority of us have, you know, have money concerns in our life and
sure,
we're cost
it's a
conscious.
Limited budget. Yep.
Yep. So one of the best things you can do is use a simulator. And a simulator, especially if you have one at home, is an infinite amount of hours and an infinite amount of things that you can do in the simulator. You know, one of the great things a simulator does is scenario-based training. So things that you wouldn't be doing in the real world, you could do in the simulator. And I emphasize that because obviously in a simulator, there aren't any consequences. In the real world, there are. You don't want to get the two mixed together and take, you know, you could take off in a thunderstorm, for example, in a simulator. You'd never want to do that in the real world. So you have to be careful there.
Right,
but
right.
There's just so much opportunity to do a lot of work in a simulator. And it does absolutely carry over. Again, it's not certified, but that doesn't matter because the goal is to be a safer aviator, to carry your passengers around better, to be more proficient as a pilot, more accurate in your control inputs and your holding of altitude and all that stuff. You can get so many of those skills from a simulator. It's absolutely unnecessary to get it in an airplane. Obviously, you want to verify it in an airplane, but you don't have to do that.
Right, right. And, you know, one of the things, too, that I wanted to mention, not to plug your own stuff, but, you know, the Aviator 90 program that you guys developed and came up with, you know, really does that. I mean, by the end of that program, you are getting into scenarios and decision making and things like that. And then your professional pilot program, I believe that's what it's called, right? The instrument.
Yeah, Aviator Pro. Yeah.
Aviator Pro. Yeah. I mean, just a really great resource for existing pilots even to, you know, brush up on the skills and, you know, really work on that stuff. I'm a visual learner. So I love the video. The audio and video content just works for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a lot of students like that as well. So, you know, really great product. We appreciate it. That's obviously how we met
right.
with you know, started using the Aviator 90 program and just really great. On top of that, there are, and you mentioned scenario-based training, there's actually a fantastic book that came out. It's by Bruce Williams, mm-hmm. And I don't get any money for plugging this. But
we've actually had him on the show.
Yeah, you've had Bruce on the show, so I'm sure you've talked about the scenario-based training book that he has, using the FAA industry training standards.
Yeah, the FITS. Yep.
Just fantastic. I mean, there's a reason why the FAA said, hey, here's the standards that we should be training on. We should be using scenario-based training. It's really funny because a lot of instructors don't use scenario-based training, and it's a shame. But, you know, before every flight, I always talk to my students and say, hey, where are we going? What are we going to do? You know, we're going to go to your grandma's house or something up in Wisconsin or, you know, and then halfway through the flight, oh, geez, you know, this cloud deck is really coming down, and really forcing them to think outside and say, oh, okay, well, what do I do? Okay, I got to figure out something. I have to make a good decision. So, okay, what do I drop down? Do I turn back to, you know, and just see what their reactions are. So we do that, or we're supposed to do that. Using Bruce's stuff, and that book, his book is just even the tip of the iceberg.
You get
to the Bruce Williams website. My gosh, just fantastic content on there.
He
gets it. He gets it. It's, you know, the simulator. And like you mentioned, you can put yourself in those scenarios. You know, you want to try to shoot a 30 knot crosswind or something on landing, you go right ahead, give it a shot in the simulator. Mm-hmm. You know, just one of those things where you can always hit pause, okay, and kind of regroup and figure out what's going on. There's no pause button in the real airplane.
Definitely. You know, there is kind of this enlightenment right now, and this isn't necessarily a simulation conversation or a topic, but there's this enlightenment right now that I'd really like to see take hold even more, and that is the use of scenario-based training. And obviously, Bruce Williams has done that with his scenario-based training books that kind of are geared towards simulation, and those are really great. But just speaking to scenario-based training specifically, one of the most enlightening episodes I've had so far on AviatorCast was with the author of The Killing Zone, Dr. Paul Craig.
Yeah,
and he talked about, and actually they have all the data to back it up. They actually took one body of students versus another body of students and put them through a scenario-based training curriculum versus the same old maneuvers-based curriculum. Mm-hmm. And what they found is that the students had fewer setbacks. They finished their private pilot sooner, and they were making better decisions along the way. And then they went even further with that and created an FAA-certified private pilot instrument combined that they could basically take their check ride at the same time for both of those licenses and get them at the same time. And that's more kind of a safety thing, because he really believes and has shown with data that that pilots are safer having had an instrument rating. But this scenario-based idea of training as if it is going to be real world is really compelling, because at the end of the day, that's what it is. And, you know, early on as a pilot, I said, why do hours matter? You know, why is the FAA requiring me to get 200 hours or whatever it is for whatever license? I have more than that. But what I'm realizing now is that there's actually wisdom in that, because when you go through your experience as a pilot flying from day to day, you face different situations and different scenarios that you have to get through and that you have to problem solve. And every time you do something different, you add that to your book. Every time you read up on an accident report, and it's pretty detailed and they understand kind of what the chain of events were, and you choose yourself to learn from that experience and commit to yourself that you're not going to do that sort of thing, you know, you build up that experience. So there's definitely wisdom in the hours component of it. But man, you know, why not get some of this in a simulator where there aren't a lot of consequences, especially early on when you can just fly and fly and fly on a simulator and don't really have to worry about running up a $30,000 bill on your private pilot. You know, why not just do it on a simulator?
Right. Especially with the integrations we have now with all the different softwares. You got even people talking about using the Oculus. I don't know if you saw that at AirVenture, but
I didn't see it there.
Oculus,
but I know what it is.
Yeah, the Oculus Rift, they were trying to program it. I had the privilege of flying the demo. It was very interesting, very, very virtual, and it really put you inside the cockpit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, in future, we're going to see things like that come out. That's a much lower price point to make things more realistic. I mean, we've seen it already with the graphics processors that have come out,
right?
Things like that. We have things like Live ATC that we can listen to, mm-hmm. As well as the air traffic control clubs and integrations you can use.
Yeah, Pilot Edge, stuff like that.
Pilot Edge, absolutely. So, I mean, it's getting more real life, which only is going to help, the usefulness of simulation.
At the end of the day, what I say is that when you're in a simulator, you want to momentarily forget that you are in a simulator. And that is what a good simulator does. That's why the FAA, or rather the airlines, have FAA certified full motion simulators, so that the pilots, for several moments, or even for moments, you know, stacked on top of each other, forget that they're in a simulated airplane, because it becomes more real to them and becomes, you know, just this environment that they're completely immersed in. And although full motion isn't completely accessible yet, it's getting more accessible with the Redbirds of the world. But even though it's not completely accessible yet, we still have these different components. You know, you talked about the Oculus Rift. There's been the air traffic control thing for a long time. Recently, I've been using an app that connects to ForeFlight on my iPad. You know, I'm going to use an iPad to fly.
Glad you mentioned that.
So lots of different things going on.
Yeah, actually, it's a great point, Chris, and I totally forgot about it. But that's one of the things we actually do. Mm-hmm. A lot of pilots are using EFBs, right? Whether it be a ForeFlight on an iPad or an Android. But the problem with that is, just like learning to fly, learning to use these apps in the actual airplane is the absolute worst classroom in the world.
Oh, yeah.
So by going to a school like mine that has the ability for students to bring their iPads or Androids in and connect to the simulator, they're able to practice that software as well, which only makes for a much more proficient pilot up in the air. So I'm glad you brought that up.
And like you said, it's not something you want to learn on the flight deck, because those devices become part of your workflow. And if they don't become part of your workflow, then they just become a distraction, just kind of like how they usually are, you know, when you're in church and you want to look at a football score. At least that's what happens to me. Mm-hmm. But in an airplane, they shouldn't be a distraction. They should be there as an informational tool. And the kinds of information that are being pumped into it is absolutely amazing. And we have that at our fingertips, but it's got to be in its place, and it's got to remain as an informational tool and not a distraction. So very powerful, but like you said, should be learned outside the cockpit and not inside the cockpit. And really, honestly, that's exactly the process I'm kind of in right now, because those apps are very powerful. They have a lot going on.
Yep.
And in my conversations with people using those, even the lead designer of ForeFlight was on the show. And while we were on the show, he was telling me all these little things I could do, you know, his favorite features of little things I could do that were just absolutely amazing. And man, if I was in the actual airplane trying to learn that stuff, I would be so distracted and I would be going left and right, and it just wouldn't be a good situation. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it is good. And, Garmin actually had the thing for their 430s and 530s. I don't know if you remember that. It was an application you could download off their website that was a simulator, so you could learn the Garmin 430 and 530 off the airplane.
Right, definitely.
It's really difficult to do that with ForeFlight as far as the in-flight features. So it is great that we have this integration now. The Cygnus with Redbird Cygnus. Any flight school that has a Cygnus system, you guys will be able to out there in the internet world, be able to bring your iPads in there with ForeFlight and, you know, connect up to it and see really how it works.
Mm-hmm. And there's even a little program you can get just at home for your own home simulator,
right.
called FSX Flight or something like that. And I think that X-Plane hooks up natively to the app somehow over the air. But, you know, all these different things we're talking about, I think the major point here throughout this entire conversation is that there is so much you can do in a simulator that you don't have to learn in a real airplane, mm-hmm. that you can, you know, save money there. I'm not going to really say save time, because what we're talking about here
is...
it's going to take more time. Yeah. We're talking about proficiency, and proficiency happens, you know, it takes a longer time. That's just a fact of the matter. Yep. And honestly, if it was up to me, I'm actually at the camp, and I know it's probably a little different for you because you run a business. But in a perfect world, if we didn't have to worry about money or time or anything or some of these requirement constraints, in a perfect world, it'd be great if every private pilot was required to get an instrument and get a little more cross-country time, you know, and some of that real-world experience. But that's not super realistic, so we have to find these other ways to make sure that we are safe and that we have some body of experience in our corner, especially when it comes to private pilot. You know, that brings me to kind of a question. Are you seeing a lot of people using the simulator after they're getting their private pilot? How are people integrating this in their instrument training? 'Cause simulators are great for instrument training.
Yeah, that's fun. That's actually funny you mentioned it. You see, we've seen a significant drop off of people after they've gotten their private pilot ratings, mm-hmm. Not go on and do the instrument exercises, which, you know, I think is kind of bad, because we have the abilities. You know, we have Bruce Williams' book. The second half of that book is all on instrument training. So it's not that. You know, I think they're just so excited that they got their license that they don't go out and actively pursue the next step, even if it isn't with an actual instructor, but even just trying to, like you're saying, pilots putting themselves in those situations to try to practice that. So, you know, God forbid they actually get into that situation. They're going to be a lot more able to handle the situation than somebody that hasn't had any simulator training at all in an instrument environment.
Right. And it's not that we're talking about simulating every single thing you're going to go through. We're talking about that building of decision making and making wise decisions in the airplane, so that you can analyze things and choose a correct course, choose a safe course, and live to fly another day.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, flying as a private pilot, non-instrument rated, is actually very dangerous. And this is something I learned from Dr. Paul Craig. It's actually more dangerous than driving. And we all say that it's safer or whatever. But in that particular case, if you're just a private pilot, no instrument training, it's actually more dangerous.
Yeah, we always recommend people at least get, 5 hours of instrument training beyond. And in fact, you know, I'm with the school. I actually take my private pilot students up into actual conditions.
Great.
Every single one of them, because I want them to know what it's like so they don't do it.
Absolutely.
Because you can't simulate that. There's no way you can simulate that. Fortunately, in the Chicago area, we have cloudy conditions fairly often. Mm-hmm. Up by you, probably, you got the same thing.
Yep.
Unfortunately, people down in Phoenix, they don't have that ability. But, you know, it is very important, I think. And it's one of the things we do, make sure everybody goes up into actual conditions to really make sure that they don't do that, because it's just not a good idea.
Absolutely. So what's next for you guys? What are you kind of looking at in the near future here? And we'll wrap up the show this way.
Sure. You know, in the near future, we got a number of different programs. As far as NAFI goes, we got, you can see us at Sun and Fun. We have our professional development program that we're putting on in January. It's actually going to be in association with the, we have a Illinois Aviation Expo put on by the state here. So it's going to be in association with that.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see many more programs coming out. We have actually a mentoring program, which is put on by one of our directors. He's a 747 Czech airman for United.
Great.
And so he knows a thing or two about professionalism, you know, being in a position like that. And he's kind of heading up our instructor mentoring program. So not
Great.
Pilot mentoring, but specifically for those instructors that want to get a little bit more information on being a better instructor, being a better professional, and how to get to those very good paying positions. I mean, they're not as good as they used to be, but hey, you know what? That's still a top of the top as far as aviation goes.
Right.
And then the final program we actually have that we're rolling out is, we'll kind of wrap up nicely here. It's called our NAFI FTO directory. And you can go to comeflywithus.net or .com. I'm not sure which one it is. But what that's doing is we're going through every single FBO in the country, making phone calls, making sure they're actually an FBO, a place where you can go to flight train, because there's so many directories out there that have, you know, cargo companies and things like that on there that they just want web presence.
Right.
So this is actually going to be a monitored web directory specifically for flight schools and flight training organizations. So you're going to see a lot of that come. And finally, last but not least, we're going to be unveiling our student membership for NAFI, which is specifically for people that are in degree earning programs, Embry-Riddle, UND Aerospace, programs like that, to try to mold those instructors to be the best they can at that point. So we're trying to, you know, hit it right where they're starting to get that instructor rating and point them in the right direction. So you can see we got a lot of stuff going on in industry and really want to try to help increase the instructor community as far as proficiency and just general customer service.
Great. You know, we've talked a lot about actual students and simulation and things, but instructors should absolutely look into what you do and look into some of these programs, because a lot of them are kind of out there on their own, kind of flying solo, if you will, and they don't get a lot of this support. So it's really important for an instructor, especially when they kind of have a lot of times their own business and that's something that they want to start up. It's really important to drill down into some of the stuff and kind of get kind of a team in their corner, if you will.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're talking about supporting the programs. I forgot to mention, if anybody on the out there in internet world wants to find out more about the Learn to Fly program or how they can be involved in it, both as far as monetary and as far as curriculum development, you could go to NAFIFoundation.org.
Great.
NAFIFoundation.org. Find out more about the NAFI Learn to Fly tour.
And we'll put links to all of your stuff for your flight school, for this comeflywithus.net. And for NAFI, we'll put all that in the show notes on aviatorcast.com so people can get all of it there too. Just make it easy on you guys.
Perfect.
Rick, I really appreciate you coming on the show. You're doing some very exciting work and work that I actually don't see too often. So I really appreciate all the hard work you're putting in. And I'm really looking forward to the next couple of years to see how all this kind of comes together.
Oh, thank you very much, Chris. We really appreciate it. And all the work that Angle of Attack Media has done has just been tremendous, bringing a lot of simulator stuff to life. And we look forward to seeing what you guys come up with next as well.
Great. Appreciate it, Rick. Take care.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye. All right, a huge shout out goes out to Rick for joining us on this episode of Aviator Cast. It's really interesting to get a take from an instructor and a guy in charge of a flight school that really understands just how powerful simulation can be. And again, we're not talking about the type of simulation that is just loggable or what the FAA says that you can log, but using a simulator as a tool to get very familiar with your aircraft, with the procedures, and using it beyond the scope of what is typical of a flight school. You know, taking all the time you need to really get used to those procedures, really get used to the checklists, really get used to the instrument flying. There are so many different things that a simulator does a great job with that it looks like Rick's students are using, and it's paying off really well. And that's definitely something that I too have seen in the flight simulation community and the aviation community as people use their simulators to their advantage. This is one of those tools that you can have as a pilot that really brings the power to you. It helps you have an infinite amount of time to practice those procedures you need to really get great at it and then go in a real airplane and essentially verify. Now, if I'm being completely honest, a simulator is actually much more difficult to fly than a real airplane. And the reason being is that in a real airplane, you have a lot of visual and kinetic cues and a lot more senses than you do in an actual simulator. So therefore, your body kind of gets into flying a real airplane more than it does a simulator. So when you take those skills that you've learned, say just as an instrument pilot, and bring those over into an actual cockpit. So what I mean is those skills learned in a simulator, bring those over to an actual cockpit. You will find that you're catching on a lot faster in the real airplane. You're not behind the airplane the entire time. You know, as a VFR pilot, you go out there, you fly and you enjoy the scenery and you go from point A to point B and everything's kind of carefree, maybe not completely carefree. But then as an instrument pilot, it is by the book, you know, procedure after procedure, checklist after checklist, and then slowing things down for yourself in your own mind to where you really understand what's going on. A simulator is tremendous for that type of thing. And it's one of those things where you can gain a lot of experience with these things without actually having to go into a very expensive airplane. This is one thing Rick really, really understands. And heck, I wish I was in Chicago to take some training from these guys. They sound absolutely fantastic. So thank you, Rick, again. Much, much appreciated for your time that you spent with us today. And you guys can go and check him out. They are at Chicago Premier Flight Training. That is cpflighttraining.com. And you can also learn more about the work that Rick does with NAFI. And you can find them at nafinet.org. Great organization there, really trying to make quality instructors out there, which I am huge on. All right, guys, so now we have some after-show AviatorCast actions. The first is you can take a quick two-minute survey at survey.aviatorcast.com. Here you can give us ideas for upcoming shows. Second, continue the conversation by joining the conversation of this episode on aviatorcast.com or write me directly at me@aviatorcast.com. I'd love to hear from you in either of those locations. And yes, I do answer every email I get. So go ahead and write me if you have an idea. Third, you can subscribe. If you don't want to miss another AviatorCast episode, you can simply subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, SoundCloud, and more. Many people in many different spots are partaking of AviatorCast. And fourth, leave a review for us. This is how other people learn about us. We'd love to get an honest review about how you feel about this show. And the best place you can do that is on iTunes. That's where most people find out about us. This helps, again, others learn about AviatorCast so they can enjoy it. Also, if you'd like to check out our training products here at Angle of Attack, head to flyaoamedia.com. Start with the basics for free with Aviator 90. That's something that Rick mentioned. Learn instrument flying and more with Aviator Pro, or even fly many of the world's most popular jets virtually with our training products for the 737, 747, 777, and MD-11. Again, at flyaoamedia.com. And Angle of Attack also offers professional video services at angleofattackpro.com. Many thanks also go out to the Angle of Attack crew for all of their hard work to make these episodes possible and all they do outside AviatorCast. These guys are top-notch and deserve a good salute from the community. So thank you so much for joining us on this episode of AviatorCast. We are truly grateful to have you here, part of our community, and so engaged in this wonderful passion for flying things. Until next time, throttle on!
Data 5-8 is ready. Data 5-8 in the shoreline, turn left heading 235, maintain 2000, runway 25 right, clear for takeoff.
Clear for takeoff, 25 right, United 580.